I had to reinstall Discord. I always use Discord for my Electron hacking demos, and I always mess it up, and then it doesn't start after a while. So, like,
the you're an evil, evil man tearing apart Discord. What?
Yeah. Well, they are good demonstration case. Like, they have all the Electron vulnerabilities you want, and they don't fix it even after. I mean, you want for a demonstration.
Oh, okay.
Like, they just have everything, and you can demonstrate everything using Discord, even though it was reported to them, like, I don't know, 4-5 years ago, and they don't care. So, like, I have a good demonstration application for Electron.
It's like a evil mother-in-law compliment. You're a really good application for demonstration.
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, that's funny. I guess Electron, yeah, we like to talk about that. Hey, I guess Mikola was talking about that previously. I guess everyone's talking about Electron.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
What is it with these, you know, build it once, ship it everywhere, everyone suffers kind of, you know, coding platforms?
I mean, nowadays there is a way to fix or deploy all of your macOS Electron apps with either disabling or enabling some of the fuses for security. So today you can actually do it securely. And actually many people started to deploy, like many applications started to set these fuses properly, but some just don't care.
Wow. So it's a choice.
Yes.
Welcome to the Mac DevOps YVR podcast. This podcast is about the Mac DevOps YVR conference in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia. We interview guests and discuss topics around managing Macs using open source software products inspired by DevOps. Our goal is to encourage developers and IT to work together to solve problems for our community. For more information, see our website, mdoyvr.com. This is the Mac DevOps podcast. Well, welcome to the podcast, Chaba. Let me introduce our fearless co-host here. How's it going, Jack Daniel?
I'm doing well, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. We just jumped right into it. You can't launch Discord without talking about Discord. Is that a new rule of Fight Club here?
I think so. Don't talk about the bots, though. We don't want to make them angry.
Thank you to the bots, and thank you to JD. Today on the Mac DevOps podcast, we're welcoming a great and awesome person that has graced us once before during the pandemic years, but now in person in Vancouver at Mac DevOps 2025. Welcome, Chaba Fitzel.
Hi, Matt. Hi, JD. Thanks for having me.
Yay!
And yeah, finally we make it to Vancouver after so many years.
I mean, we were lucky to meet in person last October in Sweden, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
Nice. So you've been getting around the world to all the conferences. That's great.
Not all the conferences, because probably I wouldn't be at home through the year, but to some.
Yes, 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 yes. We have to.
I look at conferences as Pokemon. You got to collect them all.
Uh-oh.
Or attend them all.
Yeah, I think nowadays you have a conference for every single day of the year, so you can literally just do like a world tour of conferences.
One of the things that you like to do, Chaba, is go running in the mountains. So have you made any plans in Vancouver? Have you picked a mountain? Have you?
I definitely did. So I will stay for 4 more days after the conference, and I'm planning to visit the Garibaldi National Park.
Oh, very nice. Garibaldi, yes, very nice.
Probably for all of the 4 days, there is enough hikes or stops to see there.
Oh, there really is. I mean, it's a huge, huge area. During the pandemic, we went on a big hike with my family in behind Whistler in Garibaldi. And there's like, you know, ski chalets during the winter that are there as well. And just insane trails, like just going up and down mountains.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. Are you going to do day hikes?
Yes, I plan to do that. So I will probably stay in Vancouver and then go in and out every day. At least that's my plan so far. But I heard there are options to stay in the park in some huts or something like that.
Yeah. We stayed in one. They had a tiny little hut in behind Whistler and Garibaldi, in that part of Garibaldi. And then there was a tragic accident. And so then they rebuilt this huge, like, you know, sort of ski chalet, kind of like I would only see in pictures in European mountains. And it's basically for, you know, for rent for travelers, like hikers and skiers, depending on the year, you know, time of the year. So, and then like this one hut we stayed in had like four kitchens and, you know, there's a lake nearby and you're on top of, you're looking down on like, you know, glaciers and mountains. It's just like, you're so high up.
That's pretty nice. That sounds like a huge hut, like with four kitchens.
Yeah, it's huge. And because of, we went during the pandemic, they had just opened it, but because of pandemic rules, you had to rent the entire place, which is like, I don't know, I think it has rooms for 80 people maybe. So it was like, had a couple of families and we rented the whole place, but yeah, it felt like we had a castle or something. I think now it's more likely you just get a room.
Oh, wow.
Let's talk about Mac DevOps. I'm so excited that you're going to come into town and give a talk. Big fan of yours. You've been giving great talks and great blog posts everywhere you go.
Thank you.
So, I think we should start with, you know, a little bit. How did you stumble into security? What is your short origin story? Seems like you were doing network stuff.
Yes, I did for quite a few years, and then I took a training on ethical hacking for a week, and that blew my mind, and like it was really eye opening. What you can do sometimes and how easily you can do those stuff. And well, it was fascinating and scary at the same time. And I knew that I want to do this stuff. So I started to educate myself. And that's how it all started.
Nice.
Many, many years ago. And I stuck.
Was that somewhere close to home? Or, I mean, in Europe, I'm so jealous, you know, there's like, you know, I'm going to make up a number here, but there's 500 countries all around you, you know, and so were you able to find training locally, or was it somewhere in Europe?
It was actually in town. So it was in Hungary, the training. And later on, I took online trainings and I also traveled abroad for other trainings. So I took many trainings later on through the years, but for the basics, I could start in the country.
Nice.
And then go from there.
On the one hand, you went from, you know, networks or, you know, sort of, I guess, IT maybe, or managing networks, to suddenly figuring out, trying to find vulnerabilities. And one is building and one is not destroying, but looking for weaknesses or vulnerabilities. Different sides of the coin, I guess.
Yes. And I think having a network, or more broadly, like an infrastructure background, was a big help in understanding systems, or like know how to do IP addressing, how the infrastructure works, how everything is connected. So having that more broad system view, I think that came really handy later on. Although the work is very much different, but you still have some background. And I can imagine if someone is coming from like a developer background to security, they enjoy the same background knowledge. Like I never been a developer, and I think I will never be. But I can see that like having a developer background is also a great help. And I do some little developments just to see that side as well, which is also contributing a whole lot. And actually, it does help a lot to understand how stuff actually works or designed to work.
Because you built at least one app that I remember running into before. You had a little security app, weren't you? Am I remembering correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
Shield?
It's called Shield, yes. And I did that to learn the endpoint security framework on macOS. I no longer maintain it. Like, I don't have time for that. Although I think using AI nowadays would make it really easy to maintain. But it was a small project, but for me, it was quite big. And yeah, and I remember it was a hassle to get the endpoint security entitlement from Apple that time. And as I heard from people, so some people actually nowadays, some get it easy, and some people still get it really late, or they don't get it at all.
Well, that is a good segue into the whole one part of Apple security. I'll call it a framework, but layers is these entitlements, and then developers having to ask for these entitlements, which should be a good system, I suppose. How do you feel about Apple and using these different various entitlements for different aspects? You know, is this helping?
So for the developer part, I can see why they don't hand it out easily. Some of them can be really powerful, like the endpoint security one can be really powerful in the wrong hands. So I can understand why they don't give it out to everyone immediately.
Yeah.
Talking about their own entitlements for Audicom Apple Private Star, that's an interesting approach. It certainly works.
Yeah.
But it can make stuff really difficult to oversee. But basically, this is probably one of the basis of their whole security model or the entitlements. So basically, all the processes are kind of locked down. And with the entitlements, they can say, okay, you can do this, you can do that, you can do this, and so on. It's almost like everyone is locked down, so everyone is like denied to do everything, kinda, and then they open it up one by one, which can be a good approach.
Yeah, prove that you need permission for this, and then also try to get through to someone at Apple. Do you think Apple is going in the right direction with security? I mean, over the years, they've hired various security people, you know, I would maybe call them developers or reverse engineers or various smart cookies. Are they going in the right direction? Are they listening to the community? Or
I think they do. And I think over the years, they come up with some really clever systemic mitigations, even for logic bugs, which I usually do. So I normally don't do memory corruption stuff like use after free buffer overflow and all this stuff. I do more logic bugs. And every year they come up with something either minor or major that makes my life more difficult. So I think they do oversee all the vulnerabilities what's being submitted, and besides fixing them one by one, they try to come up with some more systemic approaches to mitigate classes of vulnerabilities. The last major one was launch constraints for me, which literally killed an entire class of vulnerabilities. So that was a really clever and nice move from the security perspective.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Making your life miserable is good in this case.
yes. And then if you look at the, so I normally don't do iOS, but like, let's say you lose your iPhone, and if it has a passcode, like a proper passcode set, and maybe also iCloud lock set, like you are logged into iCloud on the phone, literally that phone is entirely useless for a person who finds it. Like he can't even use it as a phone. That's like a brick, which is pretty awesome because, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 5-10 years ago, we always said that if you have the hardware, the device itself, you can own it. Like, that was like a fact that if you have physical access to the device, you can hack into it. Mm-hmm. That's no longer the case nowadays.
It seems to be a general fix for the Apple Silicon, because we used to say that in, you know, with the Intels. Yeah, it was, if you had the machine, we could secure lots of different things. But if they got physical access, then really most bets were off.
Yes. And I think nowadays that might be true also for Macs. So we are moving into a really good direction. And I'm pretty sure there are sophisticated actors who can steal hack into your device.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can probably buy an exploit for that in the market for huge amount of money. But the average thief on the street will not have access to this stuff.
Right.
So if you are really targeted by like a well-funded actor, you probably don't have a chance anyway, regardless of what platform you use.
Yeah.
But if you look at the average people and the average people's threat model, and like, I don't know, just some shady person finds a phone or steals your phone on the street, those people likely will not have access to these tools to access your device.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Talking about threat models, yeah. If you're targeted by a nation state, maybe you have to do different things than if you're just trying to target random pickpockets or thieves. Or
I'm seeing more iPhones sold as parts out there because they are essentially bricked, like you were talking about, Chava.
Yes. And now I think with the recent model, they try to do something also for the parts. So they can put some parts on a block list or something like that. So like if you detach the screen or whatever, it will be a brick as well. So you can't even use the parts anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I was just getting into that as a service provider, and Apple actually puts serial numbers on a lot of the parts that go into these devices, and they can actually tell you the serial number of all the parts inside the master serial number of the device. It's kind of crazy.
It's an interesting balance between maybe at that level repairability and trying to stop thefts and sales and the black market. And yeah, it's an interesting balance that the company has to find a balance for. So what is interesting in your world, Chaba? I know in the past you've taken inspiration from system administrators, always doing crazy things and finding hacks that way, and because they're always doing things. What's your inspiration these days?
I still do. Although I think nowadays it's less. Nowadays I do spend more time on either the open source components of Apple, or I actually do more reversing for specific stuff I'm interested. And then I will look, okay, I found, let's say, a new type of vulnerability, and then I try to basically enumerate all the components which does something like that, and then check them one by one if you can find something.
So you're saying the security research is hard work?
It is. It is. And it fluctuates. So sometimes, like, I remember in the beginning of this year, I had a week when I found, like, I don't know, 6 vulnerabilities through in a week. And then the next month, I don't find anything. It's up and down. So sometimes it does work, sometimes it doesn't. But I think you learn a whole lot from, let's call them failures or all these dead ends. When you start to research something, maybe it doesn't lead anywhere, but you learn a lot about a specific system component or a feature or something. And eventually that will contribute to your knowledge and you might be able to use it on a next vulnerability or something.
Following people such as yourself, Chaba, and when you're publishing blog posts and other security researches is so critically important for those of us building infrastructure or maintaining infrastructure, and to be aware of where the vulnerabilities are so that suddenly one day you can realize that maybe Zoom or some other company running a local web server is not a great idea because, you know, XYZ vulnerabilities, and having so many dedicated people looking for ways that the way that we built software and built infrastructure or put these things together has failures or easily exploitable problems. I think it definitely helps us build more resilient infrastructure. And so I want to thank you for your research and your work. And I think it's helping us all. I think so. We can't just do all the lazy workarounds and temporary fixes that we've done in the past.
Yeah, I do hope it helps.
I mean, I guess that's the general theory, right? Is that finding vulnerabilities is not breaking things. It's exposing things that are there in plain sight that maybe not everyone sees, that other people you don't want to know already know. So making things secure helps everybody, because the people that find the vulnerabilities don't always talk about them. So we're happy What is the procedure with Apple and other companies? Like when you find something you think is a vulnerability or a problem, how is the reporting or reproducing? What's your next steps?
Generally, there is a way to submit a vulnerability either through a website or email. And then usually they will reproduce it and eventually fix it. With Apple, for example, they did make a portal for submitting vulnerabilities, I think 3 years ago or something like that, which actually made the whole process really convenient because in the past, they used emails for all the submissions. And there are a few people behind those emails who work with the researchers. And let's say fixing a vulnerability, so sometimes it's easy, sometimes it takes like, let's say, 2-3 months. Sometimes it's like a major design change and it takes, let's say, 2 years to fix, which is insane. But sometimes it's actually easy to say that, hey, this is a vulnerability, but fix it. Sometimes fixing it actually, it's a really hard engineering problem. If it's like some architecture or design change required. So in those cases, you didn't know what goes on behind the scenes. You just sat there and waited 2 years. And I like sent emails to Apple that time that, hey, what goes on? Do you have an update? Whatever. And because they have a limited amount of people to actually work with us, often those emails didn't get a reply, or I did get a reply, but let's say 3 weeks later. So that was honestly really annoying. And the new portal they use, it's actually pretty good because you can actually see the state of your ticket. So you can see the state if it was reproduced, they are planning to fix it. And if they are planning to fix it, there is an estimated time. So let's say I can see now that some of my tickets are planned to be fixed in the fall. And like there is no need for me to send any follow-up or any email that what goes on, because I can see that the fix is planned for the fall. So I basically know everything. And I think it takes a lot of burden from them as well.
Yeah.
And it's also good for me because I can see that they are actually working on it and what goes on. And once it's fixed, they will offer a bounty. And yeah, that's it.
I thought you did it for the lulls. You did it for the laughs. You're doing it for the bounty, of course.
Both.
Both.
Yeah, well, I started this whole stuff when they didn't have a bounty. So it was like interesting. But definitely bounty is a huge incentive.
Yeah, yeah.
In this game. And they do pay good bounties, honestly. So compared to other companies, they are at the top.
Well, that's excellent. That's some good news. They value high value research and well presented bugs and vulnerabilities. I love that. So, what does a typical day look for you, Chaba? Are you you wake up in the morning, breakfast, and then straight off to vulnerability hunting, or?
I have a coffee before that as well, or two. But so I don't do this full time. So sometimes I do vulnerability research and then it goes for a few days or weeks and then I do something else. So I'm working for Crunch now. So part of the job is doing vulnerability research. The other part is to improve our detection capabilities of our EDR.
Excellent, excellent. They're putting you to work. I love it.
Yes.
and then lots of running and lots of mountains. I love all the pictures that you've posted in the past of beautiful places you've been to, and such a great hobby. It's very picturesque.
Yeah. Lots of running or hiking, but mostly running nowadays. Yeah, and then some family time and some TV shows and so on.
Well,
yeah, I wish the day was more than 24 hours sometimes, but
yeah. So what is exciting these days? You might be talking about AI, and we look forward to listening to how AI plays a part in your research. What do you think about the big picture about all these different AI tools now, and what kind of crazy and awesome world we live in?
So I was really skeptic, Carl, on AI for a very long time until I started using it. Actually, I started to seriously use it last year. And honestly, it's awesome. Like, again, I'm not developing, so I'm not trying to use it for developing like a full-blown application, but it does help in a lot of cases. So it does help in a lot of the automation stuff, either by like writing shell scripts. I could probably write it on my own if I wanted, but using AI, it's just way faster than me writing it. And usually, many times it gets it right for the first time, but if not, through a few iterations, it can either fix it, or let's say there is maybe a line or two which it just cannot get, and then I can fix that myself, but still, it speeds up the process. So that's for one. Other is when you do reverse engineering. So many of the commercial tools like IdaPro, Binary Ninja, Hopper can decompile an assembly code and like represent, give you like a C style representation of the code you are reading. Now, what I found is if you take this code and take it to AI, the AI can actually improve more on the decompiled code. So you get even a much cleaner code than you had before.
Wow.
Actually, Wojciech recommended this to me, and it just really insane how better the readability comes after putting a decompiled code into AI. So that's definitely a huge step up there. And the third one, if I need to code some exploits, I started to use AI recently for that. Like I can, and I'm not telling it that, hey, you will code an exploit, but like do this and this using the APIs and I don't know, execute these functions, whatever. And it can really easily and fast write like a few hundred lines of code. So it just speeds up the entire process. And probably you could do much more with this if you want to scale stuff and start to automate reversing the entire macOS, I bet you could do a whole lot more with that. So this is even, I would consider basic AI usage, but it's already a huge leap forward.
Yeah, it's kind of impressive and scary. Scary, impressive what the AI tools are doing and explaining code to you, but... I think it's good to have some basics. Obviously, it helps you understand what you're doing and what you're building and what you're asking and what they give you. And sometimes AIs hallucinate or give you bad data or bad things. So,
oh, definitely. So I remember I found system component which, based on the man page, it did support like plugins, and but there was no documentation at all, either at Apple or anywhere, how do you make these plugins? And I was like, okay, let's see what AI says. And I said, okay, can you make a plugin for this? And it was like, yeah, sure I can. Here's a plugin. And it like came up with like random function names and like it was a entire junk, obviously. It just hallucinated the whole thing. Like obviously it didn't work and like it just made up something. So you still need a human person often to review the code output or anything it outputs. But if you know that, it will speed up your work a lot. Mm-hmm. And honestly, in a few years from now, I'm not sure where we are getting to. But actually, I can see taking away a whole lot of jobs.
Yeah. This is I think everybody come to Mac DevOps. We'll talk about AI. We'll talk about security. We'll talk about everything and where the world is going. I certainly see a lot of people coming up to me confidently thinking they know something because they didn't Google it. They actually asked AI tools about it. And, you know, half the time it's completely wrong. So you do need subject matter experts sometimes, all the time. And yeah, you be careful with the tools that you use, everyone.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Chaba, you did come and give a talk during the pandemic when we were doing our Discord years. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being part of the community. I know that you belong to the world and you belong to everybody, but what can you say to encourage people to come to Mac DevOps or to come to the conference? What would you say about the wonderful things that we're doing? You know, what can you say nice about us? I'm just kidding.
But so honestly, so I never been to the MDO YVR conference in person.
Yeah.
But I did participate in the Discord conference at that time. And now I have been to the Maxis Admin conference a few times. And obviously at the Objective by the Sea. And it feels that wherever I go, and all these conferences like Mac-centric conferences, I feel that it's a small community. Everyone kind of knows each other or knows the other people, and everyone is really kind and welcoming. And just being there in these conferences and meet those people and talk to them, and it feels like a big family wherever you go. And again, it's like a really, really good community. And I bet it's the same again for the Mac DevOps YVR conference there, because I know they're mostly the same people go to all of these conferences. The Mac community is small, and I think you want to be part of it and meet those people in person. You can of course watch all the talks later on. On YouTube, everyone publishes the talks, and the talks are great, and they are one part of the conference. But I think all the hallway discussion or the hallway check or just meeting with the people is probably the greatest part of these conferences. And actually, this is what I was really missing during the pandemic. What is human connections.
Yeah. I know in the early days of my tech career, I wanted to go to conferences so I could learn things because I was desperate to learn how to do things and learn about new things. And then I slowly realized that it was the human connections that I was making that were the golden, you know, golden thing. And once you make connections, make conversations, meet people, then you can ask them later, you know, through the magic of the internet and everything. But just making connections with the community, and it's such a beautiful community. I think, like you said, that it is a smaller community than perhaps they say the Windows world or the security world even now in general. But the Mac community really is a generous with knowledge, with just kindness, and very helpful, and a really bunch of nice people like JD here, who I found out there wandering in the world.
I was wandering.
Hey, Chaba, where can we find you on the internet? Do you have a blog or anything? Or how do we interact with the famous Chaba Fitzel?
You can find me on X, which I know some people left, but I stuck with it. So you can find me on X with the nickname The Evil Bit. And I also have a blog, theevilbit.github.io. And you can find me on the Mac conferences in real life. So actually, I'm coming to Mac DevOps, and my plan is to go to Maxis Admin and OBTS as well. So yeah, trying to hit many of the Mac conferences again, because I think they are great and the people are great there.
Awesome. I just want to thank you, Chaba, for being a part of the community, for sharing your knowledge, for interacting with people and taking the time to write up your findings And you're just a truly amazing, awesome, wonderful person.
Thank you for the kind words.
And keep posting beautiful pictures of places you run and hike. I love it.
I will definitely do. Probably next time from Vancouver.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see you in person, and I can't wait to, for you to see our mountains. I know you've seen some other nice mountains, but these ones are lovely. These ones are ours. So everybody, come out to Vancouver June 11th to 13th and soak in some security Mac everything knowledge, and we'll have an awesome time. Thank you so much. Our sponsors at Mac DevOps 2025 are... Our platinum sponsor is Fleet. You can find them at fleetdm.com. Our gold sponsor is SmallStep. You can find them at smallstep.com. Our bronze sponsor is SimpleMDM, simplemdm.com. Our coffee sponsor on day one is WorkBrew, workbrew.com. Thank you so much to everybody. See you at the conference in a few weeks.
Thank you for joining us today for the Mac DevOps podcast. Thank you to our guests, and thank you to our co-hosts. Today's episode was edited by JD Strong. Please like and share this podcast on your favorite podcast service.
Yeah, when I ran my bulletin board, because I am that old, I ran a bulletin board. We had to put power as you know, sysadmins to pull people into rooms, which was kind of nice when like they couldn't figure out how to nav the bulletin board because somebody was a nerd and made it too complicated.
Well, when I was running that meetup in back of the school, you know, next to the smoke pit, you know, us kids,